This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Got some breaking news for you here on the Chiefs front. Just tweeted a couple minutes ago from Aaron Wilson, who covers the Texans and the NFL, at Aaron Wilson underscore NFL. He tweeted that the Chiefs have placed Mike Rimmers on injured reserve. Pretty big piece of news here on a couple of fronts. And then I'll get you a little college scoreboard update if you are looking for some of the things that have happened so far over this college football Saturday. But again, breaking news here. Chiefs placing Mike Rimmers on IR obviously sets the Chiefs up poorly for a bunch of reasons. One is that he was out last week after getting that starting job back over Lucas Niang. Niang started the season at right tackle, and then Rimmers was injured during training camp, so Niang got the inside track there. Then after some time, Rimmers got that job back. There was some reporting that maybe Niang had a bit of a hamstring issue, but ultimately that was the Chiefs giving the job back to Mike Rimmers. Then he had the knee injury that brought Niang back into the starting role. Rimmers was inactive last week, and Lucas Niang got the right tackle job back then, but then he had a rib injury, so he was already ruled out for this week's game against the Raiders tomorrow night as well. Both Rimmers and Niang were both ruled out for tomorrow. But this is now concerning because the Chiefs have placed Rimmers on IR a week after just having him be a regular scratch designation. So he's going to end up missing at least four total games. And the Chiefs were, I mean, again, apparently hoping that he would be back within 3 weeks. But after you're put on IR, there's no retroactive here. After you're put on injured reserve, you have to miss at least the next 3 weeks. Now, the Chiefs do have a bye week coming up, so he could miss one fewer game than weeks would be. But obviously, we'll miss tomorrow's game against the Raiders and then the Cowboys game and then the bye week. So maybe that's the math there, with the bye week being the third quote-unquote game, that it wouldn't have mattered if he was put on IR last week or this week, because it's only two meaningful games here either way. So it actually doesn't add another week because it's the bye week. So something to keep an eye on there. But Andrew Wiley clearly projected to start at right tackle here against the Raiders tomorrow night. Should be a pretty big test for the Chiefs offensive line against a good Raiders pass rush. We'll talk to Jordan Foote of Arrowhead Report about that here in about 15-ish minutes. Scooted him back just a little bit so we can talk about this. And also, I want to let you know that Mizzou right now, this is not a drill, folks. This is leading a football game at home. 14-7, Mizzou's up on South Carolina right now, about 6 minutes left in the second half. The South Carolina has the ball right now, but Mizzou fully in the game at halftime, or with plenty of time before halftime, I should say. It is not another one of those situations where they've already given up 500 rushing yards by the end of the first quarter, which I think is barely an exaggeration of a couple of their efforts this year. Mizzou up by a touchdown. KU plays tonight. Coverage of that game begins in about an hour here on Sports Radio 810, your home of Kansas Athletics. They're at Texas, a 31-point dog. But, you know, listen, we talked about this at the beginning of the show. I think if you're in for a penny, be in for a pound. Go test out that money line if you believe in hashtag KU beat Texas at football. It's happened before. Why not happen again? A top 25 matchup that has gone a pretty dramatic way, currently unfolding right now with 7 minutes left in the first half. Ohio State, fourth in the nation, is beating number 19 Purdue at Ohio State by a score of 42-14. Not a great effort by Purdue in the top 25 spotlight, as they are getting absolutely trounced right now. Mentioned Georgia and Tennessee at the top of the show. Tennessee is back down by 7, though they do have the ball right now. Again, about 4 minutes away from halftime. But number one, Georgia, holding on there by a touchdown, 17-10. That was pretty interesting. Number 24, Utah, in a tight game, only up by 2 against Arizona late in that game. I'm not sure if, you know, maybe that game matters to you, maybe it doesn't. But it's a tight game with top 25 team pretty late in the effort. Those are the main storylines of these games currently unfolding right now. Mississippi State, we mentioned them earlier, but they got the victory over Auburn today, ranked 17th at Auburn, so could certainly see Auburn falling out back out of the top 25. I don't exactly know what to make of Alabama as a whole this year. They've obviously been mostly Alabama, but today they beat New Mexico State 59-3. That was not quite the test. Although Florida in Samford was a test earlier. They crossed 70 points combined by halftime, but Florida ended up winning that game despite a very shaky start for them and a very impressive start for Samford. Big games tonight. Texas A&M at Ole Miss, that's number 11, at number 15. That should be pretty interesting this evening. And NC State at Wake Forest, number 16, at number 12 there, should also be interesting. K-State gets the pretty dominant, pretty consistent victory over West Virginia. Got out to a good early lead and then were able to hold on to that. 34-17, the final there. And Baylor in the upset of the day, the game of the day to this point, and certainly the game of the Big 12 to this point. They upset Oklahoma at Baylor 27-14. Caleb Williams benched for Spencer Rattler, and the Oklahoma quarterback carousel, as we discussed at the beginning of the show. I think if it was, and maybe this is different in Oklahoma, but I think that if that was many other collegiate head coaches at the helm of that program, you would be wondering what exactly the coach is doing with his quarterbacks. But Lincoln Riley has earned the benefit of the doubt on that front, but it's just been a mess for them, despite the fact that horrible mess has resulted in just now their first loss of the season. So not a great mess on a great scale, but very interesting and certainly very chaotic behind center at OU. Iowa State and Texas Tech, the current active Big 12 game. Texas Tech is up 28-14 over Iowa State. Certainly would be a bit of an upset there in the Big 12 standings, as Iowa's, a solid program that's put together a pretty good effort over the course of this year. But Texas Tech hoping to spoil that here, as they have the ball, are driving, just a couple seconds left before halftime. And South Carolina has tied up with Missouri. That game is now 14-14. Mizzou should get the ball back, though, with 4 minutes before halftime. I don't know who got the opening kick. I don't know if they're going to have a chance to double up or anything, but wait a second. This says South Carolina has the ball and it's tied. Was there a... What happened here? By the time I went from one tab back to the other, did South Carolina score and get the ball back? Oh, yikes. Oh, Mizzou.
That'd be interesting, because I got... What's showing up on my screen is South Carolina extra point good. Well, no. Wait, never mind. Missouri got the ball first, by the way. They got the ball first.
All right. Well, they are going to need to do a little something, probably, I would say, before the first half wraps up here. Am I going to have to go through the play-by-play and figure out what the hell's going on right now? Come on, Google.
I'm showing right now the latest play was a touchback on the kickoff. So
okay. So what I'm seeing here then on the whole 3rd and 9, that must have been when South Carolina scored to even it up, and then Mizzou will get the ball back with about 4 minutes before the half. So, yep, that is exactly what happened. All right, well, good to know. South Carolina has evened it up with Mizzou, but Mizzou will get the ball back with some time before the half. Again, to circle back on the current breaking news of the moment, the Chiefs have placed right tackle Mike Remmers on injured reserve. Aaron Wilson had that first. Again, the math, my initial thought was, wait a second, have the Chiefs perhaps bungled this a little bit by putting Remmers on IR after having him just be a standard inactive last week? Like, if you look at Clyde Edwards-Helaire, for example, right? You wouldn't want to have him wait around for a while and then put him on IR, because at that point you may have cost yourself his availability in another game. But with a 3-week minimum on the IR, even if you are designated to return, it could be as long as the full season, or you can be designated to return after a minimum of 3 weeks. Because the Chiefs have their bye week after the Cowboys game, Remmers will not necessarily miss an extra game because of the
later IR designation, if that makes sense. If they would have put him on IR after the Giants game, or just, you know, before the Packers game, he would have been ineligible to play against the Packers, Raiders, and Cowboys. Then he could have been permitted to return after that. With the current setup, even after being a standard inactive against the Packers, he will still just miss the Raiders, Cowboys, and bye week. He'll be ineligible to play. But it's still just missing those two games, in addition to, obviously, missing the Packers game. So the timing of that makes me think that if the bye week wasn't lined up the way that it was just now, maybe they would have known to put Rimmers on IR the week before and just figured, hey, no harm in trying to get this timeline scooted along a little bit. We'll give Rimmers a week to find out how long he's actually going to need to be out here. Also, though, things have gotten worse with the injury to Lucas Niang. I imagine that we're going to see some sort of practice squad elevation. Kyle Long is eligible to return from the physically unable to perform list. He's got some right tackle experience. He just hasn't played football in a minute because he didn't play last year, and then he suffered his injury before the season. It was right before training camp or that first week of, so I think it was right before camp or within the first week or so of camp. I can't remember what the circumstances of it were. But he has not played any football for the Chiefs this year, did not play any football last year. As he retired for a year, then came back to the game, then unfortunately got hurt right away. But maybe he did return to practice for the Chiefs, as did Clyde Edwards-Helaire. There is a window that teams have where a player can return, and then from IR you can practice for up to 3 weeks before you have to be activated. Which basically is just sort of a reheating time that the NFL builds in for injured players, which makes plenty of sense. If you've been on IR for 6 weeks and then you come back and you have to be activated immediately to even practice again, you're still probably going to miss that next game because it's hard to get back into full game shape on a week of practice. So I do not expect to see Clyde tomorrow, by the way. Andy Reid said yesterday that it would be a stretch for Clyde to be activated and to play in this game again, so I do not expect him to be activated today. And if they thought that he could be back for that Cowboys game, so be it. However, if they wanted to give him an extra week for free, they could basically give Clyde about a month to ramp up because there is no game that week of Thanksgiving. They play the Cowboys on the 21st, and then they don't play again until December 5th when they host the Broncos. So there could be a lot of time there for a ramp-up for Clyde. Maybe Rimmers is back for that Broncos game. But now you're looking at, again, a very talented pass rush with the Raiders. It's going to just be Andrew Wiley, which we knew as of yesterday as well. Prince Tagovailoa is probably the next guy up. Young and a very interesting physical specimen, but certainly is not a bona fide NFL tackle. Andrew Wiley is currently playing the position that he played in the Super Bowl last year. And obviously the Chiefs went to great lengths to try to fully revamp this offensive line, even while having a very talented, high upside young tackle in Lucas Niang, even trading for Orlando Brown Jr., putting him on the left side, and then having a very reliable, very competent veteran right tackle in Mike Rimmers. Even still, we're now here at the halfway point of this season, and the Chiefs don't appear to have quite enough depth at that right tackle position, which is obviously, again, not great timing, as the Chiefs, I think, need this game on a very relevant basis. I don't want to say that this is must win in quite those terms, because the Chiefs could lose tomorrow night and then go beat the Cowboys, hit their bye week, and then rattle off a few wins in a row, and they would still be within the playoff picture. The AFC West and the AFC as a whole right now is ridiculous. The AFC West, all four teams in the Chiefs division have 5 victories. That's wild. Now, the Raiders and Chargers have both had their bye weeks already, so they're both 5-3, as the Chiefs and Broncos are both 5-4. But if the Chiefs win tomorrow night, they immediately hop the Raiders. Plus, they will end up having the head-to-head advantage in the interim before they play for their second time later in December. Plus, you go from Raiders Cowboys bye week to something that I don't know that I've ever seen before. Certainly doesn't seem like it happens very often. Three consecutive games against AFC West opponents. 3 weeks in a row. They get the, and also, it's three divisional games in 11 days because it goes Broncos at home on the 5th, Raiders at home on the 12th, at the Chargers on Thursday Night Football on the 16th. So the Chiefs will play back-to-back-to-back AFC West rivalry games in an 11-day span. Which seems crazy to me, but this is the world the NFL has built, and Thursday Night Football makes a lot of money, so it's never going to go away.
It's almost like the AFC and the schedule all played in the Chiefs' favor. A little bit.
If you look at what's been happening in the AFC, you get the Bills losing to the Jags, you get the Ravens losing to the Dolphins on Thursday night. If, I'm not making it about one person, just this is the example. If Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't fumble the ball at the end of that Ravens game, the Chiefs right now are 6-3 with a head-to-head tiebreaker over the Ravens, a chance to get even with the Chargers, and they would not have the tiebreaker over the Bills or the Titans, but neither of those teams seem particularly unstoppable at this point. The Titans obviously don't have Derrick Henry, but are still a very good football team. They also put Julio Jones on IR today, by the way. So it'll be at least 3 weeks for him. But just imagine how different things feel at 6-3 with a 2-0 start, victory over the Ravens, and you have that head-to-head tiebreaker. You might not be talking about the one seed, but you're certainly still talking about the AFC West, and you're talking about seeding advantages that the Chiefs could still have to be the 2 or the 3 seed instead of being worried about a wild card spot or instead of preparing for, you know, maybe being one of the lower seeded division champions. It's just this has been one of the stranger first halves of an NFL season that I think I've ever seen, specifically just from a chaos top to bottom standpoint. I think the Jags and the Dolphins are two of the, if not the two, worst teams in the AFC. They both beat two of the top teams in the AFC. The Jets stink. They beat the Bengals, who were either the one seed or the two seed a few weeks ago. There has been total up and down parity, except for the Texans. The Texans are definitely bad. That is the only thing I know for sure in the AFC right now.
I was just thinking, you know, you named off all those teams, Dolphins, Jaguars, they've gotten big wins as a bad football team. Now is it the Texans' turn? Are they going to have a sneaky win against the Titans that sets Tennessee back? It's a formula now. It's a pattern that we're seeing.
It is. Yeah, you're right. They have the Titans at noon tomorrow. God, can you imagine? Here, I'm going to just rattle through this real quick, then we'll take a break. We'll come back and talk to Jordan about this Rimmers news and everything else looking ahead of this game tomorrow. The Bills and Patriots are both 5-win teams in the AFC East. The Dolphins and Jets both stink, but have both beaten top-tier contenders at the time, at least, in the AFC. The Ravens are 6-3, but they just lost to the Dolphins, who, as I just mentioned, stink. The Steelers looked inept for a while. They're back to 5-3. The Browns look like they were in trouble for a while. They're 5-4. The Bengals, who were at the top of this division the blink of an eye ago, they're at the bottom of the division now, also at 5-4. The Titans are 7-2. Clearly, the best record, the only 7-win team, the only 2-loss team in the conference, and I think everyone is still a bit skeptical of them. They've lost Derrick Henry now. Then you have the Colts and Jags, who are not particularly good, but do have some good wins, and then the Texans, who are just bad. And then the AFC West, 5 wins all the way through. Even on the NFC side, I'm pretty sure the Cowboys are good. Whoops, they just lost to the Broncos, who I didn't really think were that good. But now I don't know. The Lions are the only winless team remaining. Do you know who they have this week?
Rams?
They have the aforementioned Steelers.
Oh.
Tell me, and the Steelers are now again, like, they're rising back up. Tell me that you would be absolutely shocked if the Lions beat the Steelers tomorrow. I wouldn't be. Because both of those teams are, like, 2 degrees of separation from each other. Is Jared Goff a worse quarterback than Ben Roethlisberger right now? I'm not sure. In fact, I kind of think he's probably not. But the Steelers have a lot of other things that obviously the Lions don't currently have going for them. But that is the world of the NFL right now. Which is another reason that tomorrow's game between the Chiefs and the Raiders matters in an enormous way, because it's going to end up putting one of these teams even farther behind the eight ball in the conference, in the division. And for the other team, it's going to put them right up there in the driver's seat. It's a hugely important game. We'll talk about it with Jordan Foote whenever we come back here on Sports Saturday.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB. This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Let me shoot a seven with every shot's a beaver.
I get it, Marco. I get it. Subtle as always. Sports Saturday continues here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Let's talk about Las Vegas. Let's talk about the Raiders. Let's talk about Chiefs Raiders right now with Jordan Foote. You can read his work at arrowheadreport.com. You can follow him on Twitter at footnoted. You can listen to him on the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast. And we have a little bit of news to talk about here, Jordan, as well. Mike Remmers placed on injured reserve. Obviously, he and Lucas Niang are both ruled out for tomorrow's game as of yesterday anyway. So Andrew Wiley will be there regardless, but that is not a great development for the Chiefs. I would imagine you would agree.
Yeah, it's never good. I mean, especially with the team Chiefs and then the term offensive line injuries, you know, in the same sentence. That's never a great combination. You know, it's Mike Remmers has been battling this knee thing for a while. It's been a rough year for him because he obviously had the training camp injury, kind of lost his job to Niang. He was in the driver's seat for that. Then gets thrown in there. I believe it was against the Washington football team. Plays somewhat well. Then Niang eventually comes back in, and now Niang's hurt. So it's, I suppose, good news for Andrew Wiley. It's never good news when someone gets hurt, but he's going to get that opportunity, it seems, unless Niang can make a quick recovery. But all around, never like seeing people get hurt. And the timing of it definitely isn't great, even with that bye week for the Chiefs coming up.
Yeah, and I'm going to just mention that again because my immediate thought was, wait a second, why was he just a normal scratch last week and now he's on IR? That's that's a roster mismanagement. But in this instance, it actually doesn't really change the number of games that he is required to miss because he wasn't going to play last week regardless of if they put him on IR now or if they would have done it before the Packers game. Which also means no Raiders game, which also means no Cowboys game. But because, you know, putting him on IR today as opposed to this time a week ago, the quote-unquote game that he would have to miss is the bye week. So I don't know if they just thought, you know what, we'll give it a week and we'll see if maybe we get optimistic news and maybe he'll be back sooner. But I would imagine that they probably believed internally that he was going to be out through the bye week either way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, knees are always really tricky, especially for offensive linemen. Really, offensive linemen is such a high-impact position, you know, that really anything other than apparently like a fractured hand, which I would expect to be a pretty major deal, knees and backs and all that good stuff definitely never help. And even Niang, we thought it was maybe an arm injury at first and then turned out to be a rib. So it's never a good thing. And the Chiefs, good. Luckily, they have some depth along the offensive line. I know a lot of people have brought up Kyle Long potentially stepping out as like an emergency plan at right tackle. I don't kind of picture him being the starter. I think Wiley can be at least somewhat serviceable. It's been a while since Kyle Long has, first of all, played in the NFL, second of all, been a right tackle. So lots of moving pieces there and missing parts. But, you know, Niang, who knows how serious his injury is. It kind of expected that he was going to miss a game. Remmers, if guys don't practice, they're probably not going to play.
Yep.
You know, the Chiefs are kind of straightforward with that. So just not a great situation all around.
What is your level of concern with Andrew Wiley being that guy, at least for this week, with the specifics and the particulars of the Raiders' pass rush?
Yeah, Max Crosby, Yannick Ngakoue. The Raiders have good pieces on their defense. Like, this isn't your typical Raiders defense that's just a leaky faucet and a downright, you know, really troublesome unit for the team. It's somewhat respectable this year. I don't know where they rank in any of that stuff, like DVOA or points or any of that, but they have an impressive pass rush. I mean, they're going to get after the quarterback. They are going to get pressure no matter what, especially with Andrew Wiley and especially with even Orlando Brown being a guy who struggles with speed rushers, and Ngakoue wins with that. It's going to be tough. The Chiefs are going to have their work cut out for him. I expect maybe a little bit of help for probably not Brown. I'd expect them to leave him kind of on an island to do it himself, but some help for Wiley, potentially a running back or another tight end to do that and kind of say, hey, if you struggle early, we've got your back, or if you hold your own, then great. It's going to be a tall task, I think, for them to be able to do it, but it's definitely a bad week, I think, to be without some of your premier pass protectors.
This is going to diverge a little bit into just, like, general Raiders stuff, but you mentioned Max Crosby and Yannick Ngakoue. Following that up, like, Carl Nassib has had a very solid season, and then Cleveland Farrell, who they drafted fourth overall in 2019, is just a bit player at this point. Like, he has played 20 to 30% of the defensive snaps most games, which is more about that draft pick, I think, than just their rotation. But they've got some very good pass rushers there. You mentioned maybe getting some help there for Wiley. It's kind of funny because immediately I start having Super Bowl flashbacks. It's like, man, the Chiefs don't seem to do a lot in terms of helping out their tackles. And for Mitchell Schwartz and Eric Fisher, that largely worked out pretty well. I know there's mixed opinions amongst offensive linemen about if getting a chip is always the right thing anyway, because sometimes it might make your job a little bit harder. But I mean, if you had to kind of make a guess there, as you sort of say what you're rooting for, or hoping for, or think you're going to see, how impactful are you expecting that battle to be? Because Mike Grimmer's going to IR doesn't change anything we were expecting for tomorrow, but it does make me wonder if this is just going to get even more of a spotlight put on it right now, because it's probably going to be the chief situation. It maybe also at this point next week with Andrew Wiley at right tackle.
Yeah, it's a glimpse into what it would look like with Andrew Wiley. I mean, they're going to get it firsthand, kind of seeing what that looks like, although they've seen plenty of Wiley in the past. But it kind of, with Mahomes being right when his pocket presence was actually pretty good, the Packers, this is kind of a bad game to going in, know that it's going to be different. He did adjust well after Niang went down last week. Mm-hmm. It was impressive, I think. He did play a better game than he had in the past. It still wasn't typical Mahomes, but the mentality for this one is going to be really important. I think maybe staying to the left side, stepping up into the left side, especially if pressure is coming from the right, that's going to be something to watch for. The Chiefs lately have been doing some more runs in between the tackles than some of that outside zone stuff they were doing earlier in the year. I don't know if that's a personnel thing or they finally kind of woke up and said, this is what we need to do as a team, especially with, you know, the interior of the line they have. Trey Smith, you know, it, I guess, could maybe affect him. Like, if someone gets beat inside and he has to go help, I don't think it's going to really bother him too much. Really, it's going to be interesting. I think they have their work cut out for them. I think Mahomes is going to have to be equally as good in the pocket as he was last week in order for that to help. It's just a bad timing thing. It's unfortunate. It's not only one guy down, it's two guys down. So luckily the Chiefs do have some depth. I mean, we mentioned Wong already. He potentially could slide over. Wiley is far from, I think, a bad right tackle. I don't know the PFF stuff. You know, the sample sizes are all out of whack. I thought he played mostly well, mostly acceptably against the Packers. He did have a couple reps where he just was completely outmatched, and that's you know, against the Raiders, that could be a lot more than just a couple. That is what they're going to have to worry about, I think.
I also just wonder, and I don't know who will line up where most of the time, but, like, if Max Crosby ends up on Orlando Brown Jr., something I talked with Seth about last week, but or this, I guess this week, where the Packers just had some, they have power on their defensive line, which is what the Chiefs' offensive line is built to stop. And with a guy like Crosby, I wonder if that could be more damaging this week. I know you just talked on the Rough and the Kicker podcast to our friend Hondo Carpenter, who covers the Raiders for the SI Fan Nation Network. And I'm interested if you guys got much on the rest of that Raiders defense. Obviously, their secondary has had plenty of issues even before eventually cutting bait with Damon Arnett. Do you have a feel right now for obviously pass rush and offensive line being very well spoken for these last few minutes? The rest of the Raiders defense, do you have a feel of what kind of opportunities Patrick Mahomes is going to have this week?
Yeah, man, they have, like, Denzel Perryman. He's a good player. Corey Littleton, I like him. KJ Wright, he's an athlete. They drafted Divine Diablo. He hasn't done a ton. Jonathan Abram at safety. Like, a lot of just names, mm-hmm. I think. Trevon Moehrig has actually been a productive, good player for them. I think he was their first or second round pick this year.
There were so many. They took so many safeties that I was literally just thinking that I don't remember what order they took them all in.
Yeah, because they took the kid Gillespie from Mizzou, too, didn't they, later on in the draft? I think it was insane how they just injected a ton of talent there. They drafted Amik Robertson recently, I think last year. He's a cornerback. They have really been throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall in regards to the defense and hoping that some of it sticks, and some of it has. So I think the Raiders, I've been waiting for a week in which a team strays from the too high shell. And, you know, the Chiefs are preparing for this all week. We're actually going to go back to the normal thing and see what happens, because from my perspective, I'm not sure the Chiefs would recognize it in time to adjust. And if they did, I'm not sure they would completely adjust to it. I think there hasn't been enough dynamic change, I suppose, in the offense. Like, the adjustments seem to come at halftime rather than in game. We've seen that in the past with, like, the Patriots games when Mahomes has played against Belichick. It's been struggle for an entire half, go to halftime, come out of the locker room really different. It seems like if any team kind of let their pride get in the way and said, we're going to do what we're going to do, we're not going to plan specifically to this team, we're just going to stick to our guns. And if the Chiefs struggle against this, we're still going to do what we do. It would be the Raiders. Granted, I think they are smart enough still to say, until the Chiefs can't beat this, we're going to keep doing it. Defenses are going to keep doing it. I don't expect them to suddenly blitz Patrick Mahomes a ton or pull a Miami Dolphins on Thursday against Baltimore, where they showed cover zero like 40 times, which was insane. The Raiders can get enough pressure with four. I think they have plenty of productive players there. Couple playmakers, you know, scattered throughout the second level. But overall, I think the strength of that defense definitely comes from the guys up front.
Their draft this year, so I forgot about this. They started with Alex Leatherwood, who I believe they traded up for, right?
Yeah.
And then it was Moehrig out of TCU, and then it was Malcolm Kuntz from Buffalo. Has he been hurt, or has he just not gotten any work? Do you have any idea? I'm literally wondering out loud.
I honestly didn't even know he was, like, a pick for them. So I don't have anything more than you do on that
okay,
one.
Okay, I'm trying to figure out what his deal is here, because he was a third-round pick, and he has not recorded a stat this year. I don't know. And again, Cleveland Farrell's barely getting work as a former number four overall pick a couple years back.
So they
took Moehrig in the second round. They took Divine Diablo, as you mentioned. They took him 80th overall. And then Tyree Gillespie was 143 overall. And if you want to really get into the Raiders draft game, 2020, none of their first three picks are on the team anymore. That's a tough scene.
It's hard to run a franchise like that.
Yeah.
For any extended period of time.
Like, Lynn Bowden got traded for way less than they drafted him for before the season got there. And then, obviously, they've cut Ruggs and Arnett within the last couple of weeks.
Been a rough rough go for them, really, as of late in many facets.
Yeah, so what do you think John Gruden's offense is going to do on – oh, hold on, sorry. I'm being told in my ear right now. Marco says John Gruden's not there anymore. That doesn't seem possible. No, so actually, I do want to get your thoughts on the Raiders offensively because, we've seen some good stretches from Derek Carr. They obviously do not have Henry Ruggs anymore, but they did add DeSean Jackson, who I just assume at some point is going to be open 40 yards downfield because he's been open 40 yards downfield behind two safeties for the entirety of my football-watching life. He just always is. So where are you at right now on what this offense can be? Because the Raiders have been a team with some pretty impressive stretches, and then they also lost to the Giants last week. So make them make sense for me.
Yeah, I think really without that really fast threat on the field and Henry Ruggs, they really missed him. Mm. DeSean Jackson is, like you said, always going to find ways to get open. If he can still run that fast when he's 38, I mean, he could be one of those guys that literally sticks around and does the same role for his entire career and just plays and plays and plays. And he clearly isn't as fast as he was earlier, but he's still fast enough.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's like he's got a little teleporter button, like under his helmet, that no one has ever actually caught on film. But he just hits that button, and all of a sudden, he's 40 yards downfield completely alone.
Yeah, and I think Derek Carr, again, I don't have the deep ball passing numbers. I don't know what his big-time throw percentage is or any of that stuff. But Derek Carr is a good quarterback. He's a really good quarterback. I think he has been more aggressive. Gruden leaving, I think, may have been a blessing in disguise for him. Mm. Outside of the Giants game, he was really pushing the ball down the field. Gruden didn't want him to do that. He kind of wanted him to play within the structure of the offense, which Chiefs fans definitely know about that phrase quite a bit. Carr's good, man, and he's going to challenge the Chiefs. He had a couple good games against them last season. It was a very competitive two-game series. They have Josh Jacobs. They paid Kenyon Drake like $1 billion to be a backup running back, so they have him too. Hunter Renfrow is really good. Brian Edwards is good. I believe they have Zay Jones on that offense too. Darren Waller, clearly one of the three or four best tight ends in the NFL. They have a really impressive team, so I don't think they're going to take the Chiefs lightly. I don't think the Chiefs are going to take them lightly. I'd lean more talent on the offense, maybe, just spread out. I think the quarterback position's value is a lot more than that of a good pass rush. But with that said, this isn't your normal Raiders team, and I could very well see them, having the wheels fall off the wagon and turning back into that. But they've showed enough in spurts this season, despite being 2-3 in their last five, that I think this is a pretty good ball club.
The deep passing numbers, you got my curiosity piqued, and so I went back and checked. They only have these numbers back 4 years, including this one. But for intended air yards per attempt, which is, the depth of a pass, regardless of if it's completed or not, Carr averaged 6.8 and 6.6 intended air yards per attempt in 2018 and 2019. And in 2020, it jumped up to 8.1. This year, it's been 8.5. And then also completed air yards per attempt. It went from 5.4 those 2 years to 6.2 last year to 6.8 this year. So it does seem like he's gotten a little more willing to look downfield. But again, how does that change without Ruggs with DeSean Jackson? That is super interesting, I think. You mentioned Darren Waller. And this may be our last topic, depending on how long you need to really think about this. Because I want you to take – I don't even mind a second of radio silence here so you can think about this. I want you to think about what the Chiefs should do to try to limit Darren Waller. But then I also want you to take a moment just between you and God and Steve Spagnuolo. I want you to search your feelings, and I want you to tell me what you think the Chiefs will do matchup-wise with Darren Waller, considering their personnel.
Man, that is tough. In terms of what they should do, I think you bracket him. You literally just put two of somebody, whether it's – I'm going to start on the low end and say Dan Sorensen and Ben Neiman. Like, that would be literally the – that might come up in the what the Chiefs will do section here in a second.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, putting two guys on him, I don't want to say give him the halo treatment, like really be physical with him at the line of scrimmage, deny him the ball – like defenses are doing to Travis Kelce.
Mm-hmm.
But Waller's been banged up a little bit this year. He's been getting veteran rest days, which is kind of ironic because Kelsey's getting them now at age 32. Waller's getting them at age 28, 29, which honestly is a smart way to manage players like that, to take a beating, I think. But, you know, put Tyrann Mathieu on him, put Willie Gay on him. That's what I probably would do, is spend some time putting him on Waller one-on-one. The Chiefs haven't been able to run as much man coverage as they have been successfully in the past because they just haven't had the personnel for it. I think the defense is finally getting healthy and rounding into shape to where you don't have to say, hey, Anthony Hitchens or hey, Nick Bolton, you're covering Darren Waller one-on-one. There's no help over the top, any of that stuff. I think he's going to get his no matter what. He's kind of like a Kelsey guy where up until this year, even when Kelsey has a bad game, for the most part, I think this past month has damaged that narrative a little bit. He's still going to quote-unquote get his. Waller's in that spot right now. Like, he's going to just get targets. He's going to get the ball. All you can do is hope to minimize him. And I think that putting an athlete on him, preferably two athletes on him, is the way to do it. In terms of what they will do, I don't think it's going to be as drastic as Sorensen Neiman, like combination bracket coverage on him, but I think they're just going to play him straight up and let him get whatever he's going to get. Obviously, you don't plan on saying we're going to just concede seven catches for 80 yards to Darren Waller or whatever, but I don't think they're going to go completely out of their way to shut him down. Not to say that, you know, Hunter Renfrow can't get open or DeSean Jackson can't get open. Like, if you shut Darren Waller down, the entire offense explodes. But with that said, I think that it isn't going to be anything too out of the ordinary from what we've seen from the Chiefs this year. You don't really see the Chiefs say, oh, we're going to make it an effort to shut down this guy. Like, Devontae Adams got targeted 14 times last week, and Steve Spagnuolo said, Charvarius Ward, Rashad Fenton, or not Rashad Fenton, Legarius Sneed, you're out on an island. Yep. Like, he trusts them to do that, and it comes back to bite him quite often. But the Chiefs seem to be a team that has confidence in their personnel out there and their communication. Now that that is getting better and healthier, I think that they're just going to trust their guys to make plays.
With that being said, explain to me why I should not be currently emotionally preparing for Dan Sorensen to be one-on-one with Darren Waller a decent number of times.
It's going to happen at least once. At least once.
At least, right?
Yeah, it's got to.
I wish that wasn't the way we were ending this conversation, Jordan. You know, I hate to – you don't go to bed angry and you don't end a radio conversation talking about Dan Sorensen. So give me your prediction. Tell me what you're feeling right now, because I have been incredibly tempted to pick the Raiders this week. I have not yet, although I got even closer with the Niang and Rimmers news. Tell me how you're feeling right now.
Yeah, I'm going 31-28 Raiders. I hate to say it, but I've said it all week. And the second the Chiefs beat them, I will be back on picking them against good teams like the Cowboys. But I don't consider a win against Green Bay without Aaron Rodgers a really quality win against a really quality team. And I understand that people say it's all about what's in the win and loss column. I think that leaves out a great, great, great deal of context. It leaves out a great deal of, you know, nuance to the conversation. That seems to be the new word lately on Twitter, is nuance, so I'm going to use it. It's something that, you know, until the Chiefs do it, I just don't trust them to do it right now. I'm not going to pick Patrick Mahomes to have a crazy game until he does it. I'm not going to pick Kelce to snap out of this funk until he does it. I know that these guys have earned the benefit of the doubt, and I think in the end they might be able to snap out of it. And if they can win this week, that puts them pretty darn close to being officially back. But for the sake of me being stubborn and prideful and the Raiders having an actual good team this year, I think a 3-point win is not too out of the ordinary, especially when they're hosting a team like the Chiefs.
I agree with everything that you said there, and I just, some part of me just delusionally wants to be the optimist on this front, which is weird because I'm not typically always like that. Thank you, Jordan. I look forward to chatting with you again soon. Hopefully, for Chiefs fans, you're wrong about exactly one portion of all of this, but, you know, I think for the most part, you hit the nail on the head. And, again, hopefully that doesn't culminate in the Raiders hitting Andrew Wiley in the head for the duration of tomorrow night's action.
Yeah, thanks a lot, man.
Follow Jordan on Twitter at footnoted. You can read his work at arrowheadreport.com, a part of the Sports Illustrated Fan Nation Network. And you can check out Roughing the Kicker, the 3 times a week Chiefs podcast. You can get it wherever you get your podcast. Just search for Roughing the Kicker, and you can find it there. Also, his Twitter handle is at footnoted with an E in the middle, F-O-O-T-E. N-O-T-E-D. We'll take a break here on Sports Saturday. Whenever we come back, we'll give you our final thoughts to take you out of this little NFL chat into KU in Texas. His coverage for that begins here in about 10 minutes on your home for the Jayhawks, Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Saturday with Joshua Briscoe on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This whole show has felt a little bit like Marco's audition for, like, a much more normal radio show. I'm Joshua Briscoe. Marco Marquez is the producer on the other side of the glass, picking the music and everything. And just between your Las Vegas song, this one being the song for the last segment of the show, there was another very on the nose one earlier today as well. I don't mean to be critical. I've kind of enjoyed sort of just playing it a little more straight and narrow than usual.
Gotta pick a theme. Gotta have a fun Saturday show.
Okay? Yeah, and I just think that next time we do this, it should just be something totally different. Like, every bump music is just kazoo music, you know?
Well, I was going to say, coming up on Christmas season.
Wow. If you, Marco, listen, I think you do a really good job. I like you. I like working with you. If you start playing Christmas music as bump music before Thanksgiving, I will do everything in my power to get you fired.
Then you better pray Blake is going to be more on the next 2 Saturdays.
You can't, not before. Are you Christmas music before Thanksgiving as a person?
Listen, it's not by choice. Mariah Carey dropped 4 new Christmas songs like 2 weeks ago.
That true?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Go check out her Spotify. She dropped.
I will, like, the day after Thanksgiving. December 1st for sure. Blast! Listen, I'm not a huge Christmas music fan in general. It more misses than hits in my eyes. Right? That's fine. There's some good pop punk Christmas songs out there. Not many, but one or two. But if I have to start hearing that before we've carved the turkey, something has gone terribly wrong. But if it's your conviction, Marco, I respect it. Do you have a prediction for Chiefs Raiders? I get to do another show tomorrow before the game, so I can hold mine.
I think Chiefs win 27-21 in this one. Butker is the MVP this time, not Townsend.
I wrote mine down earlier today, and it was something by 1 point. I think I had 24-23 or something like that. The thing that surprised me from Jordan's pick there is that I think he had the Chiefs scoring 28 points and losing. I buy the defense a little bit. I think the offense gets mostly right. We'll have a little more time to break all that down because I'll have about an hour before kickoff tomorrow. We got all sorts of NFL action all day tomorrow, though, here on Sports Radio 810. For Marco Marquez, I'm Joshua Briscoe. KU and Texas is up next right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.